college football, college basketball, Division I to Division III. Let's talk about it all on the Journey House College Sports Show. Powered by Waterstone Bank and presented by Soul Boxer. Alongside Dan Underberg, here is your host, Don Wachilis.
If it's Thursday night, it's another edition of the Journey House College Sports Show, powered by Waterstone Bank and presented by Soul Boxer, right here, 1250 AM, The Fan in Odyssey Station. Don Wachilis, along with the professor Dan Underberg and our producer extraordinaire, Mr. Evan Heffelfinger, getting ready for 2 hours here as we make our way through the college landscape. We're talking Badgers tonight. We're going to be talking about LSU and Coach O. We kind of highlighted that one last week, and it came to fruition to a degree, not necessarily the way we had anticipated, but nonetheless, we'll be talking about that a little bit later. Coming up at 6:20, Matt Bells from Bucky's Fifth Quarter will join us. We'll take a look back at the game against Army, a look ahead at Purdue. We'll also talk about some midterm grades with this football team. The money train rolls in around 6:50 tonight. At 7 o'clock, we'll have Mike Carman. He writes for the Lafayette Journal Sentinel. He's the Purdue beat writer down in Lafayette, Indiana. So we'll bring him in and preview this upcoming Badger-Purdue game as well. And before we get into all of this, I promised I would do this today, so a shout-out to Dr. Charles Weisburn, who I saw today, who is listening to the show, or at least he better be listening to the show, because if I find out he isn't, I'm not paying that bill. But just an avid sports fan and does an unbelievable job within the community as well through literacy and sport and some other things that he does outside of the physician's office. So just wanted to say hi to Dr. Charles Weisburn. Appreciate him listening. And so, Professor, welcome in. Missed you last week. Glad to have you back.
Good to be back.
Before we get into the Badger game last week, I wanted to start tonight with the mayhem that took place down in Tennessee, because the more the week went on, and the more I saw as far as coverage went of what happened in Tennessee, the more head-scratching it got. So for those that don't know, with about 54 seconds left in the game was delayed because the fans decided to begin throwing things on the field. Water bottles, beer cans, golf balls, mustard bottles. We'll get to that one in a second. But all of this stuff comes raining out of the stands onto the field. The Tennessee band has to run for cover. The cheerleaders from both teams have to run for cover. The Ole Miss football team has to make its way to the center of the field for protection. It was just an absolute joke. And the fans were upset because of a fourth down call that went to replay. And watching the replay over and over and over again as this coverage went on, I'll be honest, I thought it was the correct call. The kid had the ball in his left hand. When the knee goes down, he stretches out his right hand. So it gives the appearance like he's stretching out over the first down marker, but the ball itself never stretched out over that first down marker. Of course, they show it on the Jumbotron. The fans react as you would. I get the disappointment from the fan base in Tennessee because you thought you had a first down. But then what took place was absolutely ridiculous. But what really got me, Dan, is where was the security entering the game? You know, we always harp at why it takes so long to get the students in at Camp Randall. I don't know if I'll be fussing about that for quite some time. Watching the stuff that flew out of the stands, all I could picture was the gates open at 11:30, and all they do is fling them open, and come on, guys, everybody just let's pile in. And they had their first sellout in I don't know how long, 102,455 on hand. I shouldn't say I don't know how long. It was the first sellout since 2017 when they played Georgia. So you had a packed house. You had this great atmosphere for college football. What gets missed in all of this is the fact that Tennessee is playing some really good football. Like, they're rebuilding the brand again from what it used to be. But all of that gets shelved because of the moronic behavior by more than just a couple. Now, granted, it wasn't 100,000 people who lost their minds, but it was more than just a couple. And, Dan, the only thing I could think of is somebody like you who's teaching sport management and facilities and all of these other things. Like, what was the entrance policy that allowed these men and women to walk into that stadium in possession of things like golf balls without anything being checked? At least outwardly looking in, it looked like nothing was examined underway into the game.
Yeah, it is. It is really odd in terms of how that happens. I think part of that is probably, you know, cultural. They've never had the chance. They've never had that challenge before, where people are bringing things into games. And the other part might be technical. You know, you're anything that you have to pass through. If they have those down in Tennessee, you know, they're designed to pick a metal and other elements. Certainly not golf balls or jars of mustard or you know, stuff like that. They're not looking for those things. So, you know, my question to that is, you know, when you are a fan and you are upset and you have the means to find things, or you have the want to find things, then you're looking in the stadium. You know, you're looking to find things that you can use as a projectile. I mean, you know, Wisconsin kind of, the tide turned at Wisconsin years and years ago when it played Ohio State, and someone, and I forget who the Ohio State coach was at the time, but as Ohio State was running off the field, a Wisconsin fan had lobbed not only quarters and things like that, but they had taken marshmallows and they'd use that to kind of, I don't want to use glue, but they'd use that to combine a bunch of batteries, like C or D batteries, and put those together and just lobbed it at the coach, you know? And so at that point, your security pretty much figured out, okay, We've got to figure out how we're watching people come in, what they're doing, what they're bringing in, and all that. Because prior to that, it had been like soda and that stuff. Now, you know, Tennessee is going through this. They've gone through kind of a route of really bad football for quite some time. But, you know, at Tennessee, they're not used to that type of fan behavior. So I think culturally, security is not ready to look for those types of things. But, you know, you're right. Where was security? Where were the announcements? Yeah. Where were the things coming in terms of manpower coming in and say, okay, this has got to stop. You're offering protection to the teams. You're offering protection to the cheerleading. You're offering protection to the fans, or I'm sorry, not the fans, but the band. It wasn't there. And that's, you're right. I just don't think they were mentally set up to handle it, because they've never had to handle it before.
And it's a shame, because when you look around the landscape of not only college, but professional football, every single stadium and arena has this heightened awareness now about security. And granted, a lot of it stems from 9/11. And you're right. When you haven't necessarily had to deal with something, sometimes your eyes aren't necessarily focused in one single direction in order to handle a potential situation. But the idea of security has been so prevalent throughout the sporting world since 9/11 that the breakdown that took place on Saturday because of that fourth down call was just almost, in my mind, inexcusable. Now, the SEC has come in and fined Tennessee $250,000. Okay, $250,000, a six-figure fine, is a lot of money. However, when you know what boosters pay for various things, it's a drop in the bucket. And it sounds ridiculous, but it quite honestly is. When we talk about Ed Orgeron later with LSU, when you see what his buyout is and what LSU is still paying other coaches in their buyouts after being fired, $250,000 is a drop in the bucket. Dan, I would propose this. If I was the commissioner of the SEC, the Big Ten, the Pac-12, you can go right through the Power Five, and I would say this. Okay, first time something like this happens, okay, $250,000 fine. beautiful, we'll move on. If it happens again, now I start taking attendance away from games. So we saw what games were like last year when no one was able to attend because of COVID. Now I say, yeah, you still have your home game against Auburn or Ole Miss or Alabama or whoever it is, but I'm not letting you put a fan in the stands until we figure something better out to protect not only the players, the band, the cheerleaders, but what about the fan base that was sitting in that lower portion close to those benches? Their life was in peril as well. So I don't know. Tell me if I'm wrong, but that's where I would go. I'd say, okay, $250,000 fine, beautiful. But the next time, not only are you getting a fine, but I'm taking a home attendance game away. Not a home game. You can still play at home, but there are not and will not be a single person in the stands as a deterrent from something like this happening again.
My thoughts on that whole thing are, number one, that they've announced that there's a $250,000 fine, like you've said. Sure, there's a $250,000 fine. This is common in major athletics, particularly in the professional leagues, when you hear about teams, athletes, coaches being fined. The NFL will come down on a coach and say, well, we've levied a $100,000 fine against this player or particular coach. It's common that never actually happens. Okay, that the money never actually transfers. It's more of a PR means. Sure. And it just stays there. So, okay, we have no means of following up in terms of whether or not a fine is being paid for by Tennessee. And to your point, yeah, I agree with you. $250,000 in the terms of one SEC booster, Tennessee or otherwise, is really not that big of a deal. Then as I'm going back and forth and I'm listening to what you're saying about, the next step if this happens again and taking away attendance. My first thought on that idea is it's a great idea, but it's also, you're the SEC, and part of the brand of the SEC is full stadiums, and seeing a stadium like Tennessee's come in and, and you have those fans in there, and then you're taking revenue away from an SEC participant, an SEC blood participant at that. And I'm thinking, there's no way that would ever happen. But at the same time, here's the thing. The SEC is the king. And the SEC could potentially get away with that. And a little like, dropping the big bomb by the NCAA and saying, you know what, we're going to take the program away for 1 or 2 years. If you took the program or a game away from a home team for one season, okay, just one game from one season, I'll say this, you'd get their attention.
Yes.
And it would only take one time before the rest of the SEC falls into line. So the question comes into, who owns the SEC? Is it the teams, or is it the administration and ultimately the commissioner? If it happens again and it's that bad, it's worthy of discussion. The question is, does the SEC, like the NCAA, either one of those organizations have the cojones to actually step forward and do something like that? I'm really doubtful that they do.
It would be curious to see if they would go to that extreme. And it is extreme doing what I propose, but I also know that when we've seen different things happen, whether it's been in college or has been in the pros, when you go to that extreme, when you make the deterrent that extreme moving forward, it tends to work. It's a bit uncomfortable at first, but then the message sinks in and those types of things don't happen. So you build almost a PR campaign around it. If I'm Tennessee, telling fans, listen, that the mess that took place last week can't continue, because otherwise you're not going to be allowed in this place and we need you as part of the home field advantage, blah, blah, blah. While the president sits back and he's more worried about what the financial status is missing a game. The PR department's out there talking about how much they need, 102,000 people in the stadium to be the 12th man for the Tennessee Volunteers. I think it could work, but to your point, Dan, would the SEC have enough?
I know what you're thinking.
I want to say, but do they have enough to follow through and really create a deterrent so something like that wouldn't happen again? And the crazy part was, after that delay of game, Tennessee force Ole Miss to punt. They get the ball in great field position. I think it was like the 47 or 48 of Ole Miss on a really nice punt return. The problem was they had run out of timeouts, and the ball got down to the 8-yard line when there was no time left on the clock, and okay, they ran out of time, but they still had an opportunity to win the game. And all of that gets put to the side because of what this significant amount. It's not just one or two knuckleheads. There was a significant amount of knuckleheads in that stadium did, which really put an overcast on what was a pretty terrific football game. All right, we're going to get to a break, and when we come back after the break, we're going to bring in our guy, Matt Bells, from Bucky's Fifth Quarter to talk about the Badgers. We'll get to that game against Army because what a snot knocker it was. We'll talk about what's happening this week against Purdue. We'll also take a look at some of the midterm grades as we see it with the Wisconsin Badgers. Before we go to break, there was some troubling news, to say the least, before we came on the air. And so to Major Harris, his family, and those that love that little kid, we're thinking about you. Our sympathies are to you. And just know that you've got a lot of people that are thinking about you and praying for you. We'll be right back. Yes. Once again, welcome back in. Journey House College Sports Show, powered by Waterstone Bank, presented by Soul Boxer, right here, 1250 AM, The Fan and Odyssey Station. Right now, we jump to the Great Midwest Bank hotline and bring in our Badger insider, friend of show. It's Matt Bells. Matt, how are you doing tonight, bud?
Doing phenomenal. How you doing, guys?
We're doing great. Thanks again for jumping on. So let's start with a brief recap, I guess, of last week. It was one of those games, Matt, that we kind of thought would take place in that it was a game of the trenches, so to speak. Two teams really just smashing helmets against one another. Jim Leonard, I thought, did an unbelievable job defending the triple option. It was just one of those old-style black and blue football games that we kind of love to watch once in a while here in the Midwest.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the two teams combined to throw the ball 21 times, so you weren't getting a lot of air yardage being thrown all over the place. So I thought that this was a game that you saw some positives for the Badgers. I really do agree. I thought Jim Leonard had an amazing scheme kind of set up for this game. I loved his use of bringing CJ Getz down to the defensive line, allowing him to kind of be active. He played a phenomenal game. And then you had the inside linebackers. I think they were really the story. And in the end, I think Leo Chanel's forced fumble there probably won the Badgers the game. It was a little close for comfort, but overall, it was one of those where you look at a service academy in the middle of your schedule on kind of short notice. I mean, I know they played – I've been planning to go against this team for a while, but it's still something where you're going from very different schemes to all of a sudden you've got Army. I thought overall the game was fine. It wasn't pretty, but they ended up with the W.
No, it wasn't pretty, Matt, but that's just kind of how it is when you play one of the military academies. It's one of those games where they drag you down to where they're at as far as, again, what takes place in the trenches, and then you just got to figure out how to battle it out. Dan, go ahead, bud.
Well, Matt, how do you measure the performance of the offensive line? I want to start there first because, obviously, the O-line has gotten so much attention this year in terms of the level of their play, or we could even define it as lack thereof. You know, we've got it. The line basically helped produce, you know, 174 yards and change for two of its key running backs, for Braden Allen and then Ches Malusi. But should they have been able to do more as a result of kind of going against an undersized Black Army defense, or Black Knights defense, or did they perform the way you would expect them to perform?
I was hoping that they would have played a little bit better, and I think most Wisconsin fans would hope so, but I feel as though that's kind of the trend this year, right? I think at this point, I brought this up on our podcast, talking about Graham Mertz and this offensive line. Their inconsistencies are kind of becoming consistencies at this point. So it is what it is, and so I'm not shocked by it. But I do think that they should have been able to lean on the Army a little bit more, maybe get some more traction in the second half. I mean, Braylon Allen didn't get a single carry in the third quarter, which was, you know, puzzling. But you look at it, and they had one play that went over 15 yards on the ground, and that was a broken play that Braylon Allen ran into the offensive line, saw some daylight to the outside, and then hit it. So you look at that, you take away that 33-yard run, and they really only ran for about 160 yards on the ground, which isn't pretty. Army does have a very talented rush defense. They are known for that. But at the same time, I do think that you were hoping for a little bit more from this group, and I hope that maybe the return of Logan Bruss potentially this weekend could help them out in that regard.
Talking with Matt Bells from Bucky's Fifth Quarter, our Badger insider here on the Journey House College Sports Show. Matt, I guess once again, I look at Graham Mertz and issues protecting the football and the fact that Army walked everybody right up into the box. And the fact that the passing game, again, is so anemic, I wonder with now Iowa losing, we have a path, really, to the Big Ten championship game out of the West. But unless this team figures out how to throw the ball, I don't know how we get there.
I think you're absolutely right. It does come down to their ability to throw the football in meaningful situations. This isn't going to be an offense where they're going to have Graham Mertz drop back and throw it 40-plus times, nor should they, based off of what we've seen from this team. But they need to establish the run. They need to get into some play action, and then Mertz has to hit the guys when they are open. We saw that a couple times. I love that the deep throw to Danny Davis where he gave him a shot to make the play, and he did. I know that that's something that wide receivers have voiced frustration over, is they want more opportunities. They want the ball in their hands. So maybe getting some of the easy throws out of the way, some bubble screens, some quick now routes to try to get the playmakers on the outside of the ball and see if they can make something out of it can help get Mertz into a rhythm. I think that Wisconsin needs to get their passing game and get people, as you mentioned, they're packing the box, try to get people to loosen up a little bit, and that comes from being able to spread the ball around to the outside and hit some shots downfield. And sometimes that means taking a shot when it's not necessarily wide open, but you're taking advantage of a one-on-one opportunity and trusting your guys.
Right. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, I want to stick on this for a minute then. You know, it seems to me over the course of the, you know, pre-pandemic, Wisconsin's passing game was, you know, maybe not spectacular, but pretty competent in going that way. And now we've got two fifth-year seniors that are kind of leading the way a little bit. And I think, and I'm going to stay off the Mertz subject just for a second, because I think it's, you know, too much attention is given to him in terms of the pass or failing grade of the passing game. But how would you measure Wisconsin's overall approach to its passing game? Because from what I'm able to see on TV, which is what everybody else is able to see on TV, oftentimes those receivers their routes don't even give them the chance to get open. There's nothing there. And what does Paul Chryst have to do to change the fortunes of the passing game? Can he do that? Or are we still just kind of, is there a fear that we can't do it because Mertz isn't where they want him to be that, where he isn't yet?
I think that definitely plays a part in this. But I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that Wisconsin is stuck in man coverage frequently. Their wide receivers are manned up because teams are loading the box and saying, hey, you're going to have to beat us one-on-one outside. And Wisconsin's wide receivers so far this year have shown time to time that they can, but then there's also moments where they haven't been able to. You look back to 2019, and Quintez Cephas, much of that season, really made a living on back shoulder throws, where it's tight coverage, but in the end, you've got that 6'2", 220-pound frame that you can box somebody out and make a tough catch over your back shoulder. And that was something that Jack Cohn knew he could do. Danny Davis has shown that. I remember against Purdue back in 2018, he had those multiple touchdowns on those trust throws by Jack Cohn. I think Wisconsin needs to be willing to take those shots to the outside and trust that their wide receivers are going to be able to make it. Like I said, it's been a mixed bag from that group this year, which I think goes into part of the reason Mertz has struggled. But I do think that eventually it's going to come to a point where you're coming up against some of the better teams in the Big Ten that you're going to have to make those throws, because otherwise there's not going to be anything there, because teams are going to be going for stopping your running game and saying, hey, Graham Mertz, offensive line, you got to beat us.
Talking with Matt Bells, our Badger insider here from Bucky's Fifth Quarter. Matt, let's get to some midterm grades. And I guess when it always came to conferences, you always were supposed to start with something positive. So let's start at the defensive side of the ball, where I think most of the positives exist. And so if you would grade the defense as a whole and then maybe grab a couple of players who have really shined so far at the halfway point of this season.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to give this defense somewhere in the A-minus range. They've given up a couple big plays in some big moments, but at the same time, they've been kind of hung out to dry from time to time in short yardage situations and been put in, you know, awkward situations. But overall, I think this defense, they could use some turnovers, so I would probably go A-minus or maybe even B-plus if you're really getting nitpicky. But this has been the group has carried them all year long. They've kept them in every single game. And I don't think anybody would point to them and saying they're the reasons for this struggle so far. Leo Chenal, he missed those first two games, but ever since he's come back, he's an animal out there. I mean, 42 tackles in four games, 10.5 a game. He plays with a different energy out there, and I think that he's really emerging as their best defender this season. Another guy, Nick Herbig, another energy guy that comes off the edge. He's putting together his best year as a sophomore, 3.5 sacks so far in six games, and he's had four breakups in the passing game, which has been, I think, a nice jump for him, because that wasn't necessarily a strength coming out of high school for him. So those two have really jumped out. And then the defensive line, the tandem of Matt Henningsen as well as Keanu Benton, have really anchored this defensive line, allowed them to get aggressive, and have made some big plays. Benton had the fumble recovery to get them that final score against Army. Those two have played really well inside. They don't necessarily have the numbers that make you look at them and say, wow. But at the same time, those two are playing really good this year.
Dan?
Well, then, okay, fine. I guess I'll be the guy. You say you have to start on the positive. We'll move it off. Thank you so much for team teaching. So, well, let's do it. Let's talk about the offense. You know, overall, how do you grade them? But we'll try. Why don't you give us your best performer as well in terms of the offense, and then we'll go for, you know, we'll circle that little part of the assessment that says needs improvement. So overall, and then your best player.
I think overall, this is probably a D-plus, C-minus offense right now, the way that they've been playing. You look at most statistical categories, they're 115th in scoring offense, 87th in total offense. The running game, they rank out as 26th in the country, but you look at how Wisconsin has usually performed in that metric, and they're usually a lot better. So I think when you look at that, and then you couple that with a bunch of turnovers, and I have a hard time giving them anything above a C this year. And I think that's warranted, and I think that's fair, personally. But I think if you're going to look at a couple bright spots for this team, you've got a couple young offensive linemen who are in there playing. Whether they're playing well or not to this point is, you know, debatable. But they're getting experience, and I think that that's going to pay dividends down the line. Specifically at center, you've got Joe Tippmann, and then at right guard, you've got Jack Nelson, both highly regarded recruits that have come in and kind of pushed a couple older guys out of their spots. And then the two running backs this year that are still remaining on the roster or available are Chez Malusi and Braylon Allen, both of which I think have played really well. I think Malusi is playing better than advertised coming in. I think most people would have predicted him to have a role in this offense, but maybe not be the guy who's leading them in carries and averaging around 90 yards a game. And then Braylon Allen, I think he's added a nice dimension to this offense. He continues to get better each game, and I think that 1-2 punch is something that's going to be here for the next couple of years, which is something Wisconsin needs to build around moving forward. So those would be the four players I would probably look to on the offense so far this year.
Matt, much has been said about the transfer portal with the running back room and now the wide receiver room and kids, in essence, you know, making their way to the transfer portal. And last week on the show, I just kind of feel like this is the way college football is going. Like, if you look around the landscape of college football, there are a lot of kids who are entering the transfer portal because someone else has transferred in, like Ches Malusi, and now Berger's looking over his shoulder going, well, you weren't here last year. I was promised, and this is how I'm phrasing it, I was promised kind of that number one spot, and now I'm not, and I'm not sure how to take this. I don't know if I want to wait. I can go someplace else. I feel as much has been written about Badger football players making their way to the portal. It's just kind of what the landscape is right now in the game of college sports.
Definitely. I think the one caveat to this year is that it's happened a couple times during the season, and two of those players were dismissed. So it's been a little bit of a wonky start this year for the team. But I do agree with you. I think that this is the new normal. There are going to be players transferring, but Wisconsin also took in two transfers this year as well. Really three, if you consider one of them was a walk-on, and the older brother of a four-star recruit that the Badgers are bringing in the 2022 class. So you're looking at that this is going to be something that's going to be going on. Wisconsin's going to benefit from it. I think that's part of the reason you're seeing Wisconsin having a small 2022 class so far, is that they're going to bring in some players, given the fact that they're losing quite a few older players on their roster. But they're going to lose some as well, and that's part of it. Players have the right to go and seek their playing time if they think that's going to be in their best interest. I do think it's going to be more than what fans are expecting, but at the same time, that's happening everywhere, and it's not necessarily just happening in Madison.
Yeah, the landscape is changing, and I think just as fans, we're just going to have to get used to it. As much as we think it happens at other universities, it's going to happen to the Badgers as well, and we've seen it so far this year. Matt, we're up against a break. Thank you so much again for jumping on and joining us. Always appreciate your time. And you got to promise me one thing, because I was listening to a guest that we had on the show a couple years ago who's now big time and won't even answer our call. You're gonna get big time. You're too good. You will be big time. You cannot forget us, okay? Don't forget us. That's all I'm saying.
I don't think I'm going anywhere anytime soon. So, but thank you. Always love talking to you.
You're big time. Matt Bell's joining us right here on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline.
If applying for a home renovation loan has you feeling anxious, breathe and let Great Midwest Bank help you experience a state of tranquility. Get started at greatmidwestbank.com today.
All right, on the other side of the break, we've got another coaching vacancy in the world of college football, and we'll discuss it because there's a lot of different angles to approach this one, and we'll get to it on the other side of this break. It's the Journey House College Sports Show, powered by Waterstone Bank, presented by Soul Boxer, as always, right here on The Fan.
Rock and roll, that's a hot news tip for your radio. It's the headlines.
Welcome back in Journey House College Sports Show, powered by Waterstone Bank, presented by Soul Boxer, right here, 1250 AM, The Fan and Odyssey Station. Our thanks to Soul Boxer for being our presenting sponsor. Crafting and bottling bartender quality cocktails you can enjoy anywhere. The bourbon old fashioned, the brandy old fashioned, and Manhattan are all crafted to remain true to their supper club origins. Find Soul Boxer wherever you pick up your favorite libations. So we had a coaching, it's a firing, but it's a delayed firing because of, as I was telling Evan off the air, what I think took place over the weekend. So LSU is getting rid of head coach Ed Orgeron. It's time for Ed to go bye-bye. And Ed will not go bye-bye, however, until the end of the season, as his buyout, which is just shy of $17 million. Now, in sixth grade, they taught me to round up when you hit five or above, so I'm just going to say $17 million as far as his buyout goes. You got to think back. In January of 2020, he was named Coach of the Year, the same time LSU won the national title. And since then, It has been an epic train wreck. And if you get an opportunity, read the article about Coach O in The Athletic, because it's the best reality show that could have been on TV that never was.
Right.
It just when you read the stuff that Coach O was doing down in Baton Rouge, it's amazing. But Coach O also, though, had to have one of the most uncomfortable press conferences on Monday, where he had to sit next to the athletic director, the guy who's firing him, and they both had to put a spin on this to make it sound as if it was a mutual agreement. And good for both of them. They got through it okay. They had their little yellow file folders from Staples sitting in front of them, whatever the PR department wrote down for them to say. But there was one part, and I'm going to do this tongue-in-cheek, and I know Evan has this queued up, that Coach O said during his press conference. Go ahead, Evan, roll that, please.
I want to take a little time off. You know, I'm 60 years old. I've coached for 37 years. I think I'm going to have enough money to buy me a hamburger, and every once in a while, maybe a double meat cheeseburger, a Sonic. But I want to take a little time off to find out what direction I want to be in. You asked me if I think today I'm not going to coach, but that might be different a month from now. But right now, I want to take a little time off, spend with my kids.
All right, Dan?
Yeah.
A double cheeseburger is going to have – what is a double meat cheese? Where is Ed from? Like, when you start talking about a double meat cheeseburger, you know why you got walked to the door, Ed. Come on, buddy. You're in charge of a major, major conglomerate, which is now what we can call college football, and you're walking around talking about a double meat cheeseburger. I couldn't stop laughing when I heard it.
Stuff like that, it starts out, it's part of his charm. And then pretty quickly, it's like, oh, that joke again? You know, it's like one of those things where you're dating someone for a little while, and all of a sudden, that same joke, that's the same tired old routine. But you know what? I think Ed Orgeron as well is just, that's quite honestly done. That's who he is. Absolutely. That's who he is. That's what he's going to bring to his next place. Yeah. Because one of two things is going to happen with this dude. He is without question a personality, and TV loves its personalities. So you could see him as a talking head somewhere at ESPN, Fox, whatever it's going to be. And living off that $17 million buyout, getting another million and a half to sit in the studio and do that for a season. Or he's going to find his way to a smaller program, and he's going to coach that into retirement, whether that be 2 years, 3 years, 10 years. And that'll be it for Ed. But quite honestly, I think there are going to be a lot of people looking, how do we get this guy into our studio and let Ed be Ed? Because I can see that happening. And as for how quickly it goes down, I'm going to go back to what you guys were saying earlier, you know, with Matt. We now live in the era of the portal. Mm-hmm. And he struck gold. He struck lightning with Joe Bauer. And that, you know, what is that team without him? Probably not much. So, you know, he got lucky. He was in the right place at the right time. But, yeah, we haven't seen the last of Coach O.
I would love to if we could, and we can't, but spend 2 hours just tearing apart Florida football. Florida loses to LSU last Saturday, 49-42. Davis Price gets 287 yards on the ground, 3 touchdowns. Florida allows 321 yards rushing against a team that had almost, in essence, quit on Ed Orgeron the last couple of weeks. And Florida, who people keep trying to pump up as an upper echelon team, has been an absolute train wreck over the last couple of years, and it showed again last Saturday. So now Coach O, who I think would have been walked to the door, had they lost to Florida, it would have been a Brett Bielema firing, just some guy running on the field and shoving a pink slip into his pocket. But because they beat Florida, suddenly the PR department had to work something else into the fold in order to make it look a little bit more legitimate, a little bit more compliant, whatever the word is I'm searching for. but LSU. So we were talking about before, Dan, $250,000 being a drop in the bucket. LSU will now owe Ed Orgeron $17 million. Bo Pelini, who was the biggest train wreck of a defensive coordinator almost in college football history, they owe him another $4 million on his buyout. And Scott Linehan, who was brought in to be the passing coordinator, who was also fired, they owe him another $1 million in his buyout. So you're looking at $22 million in coaching buyouts, in essence, because of incompetence. So I'll say it again. Back up the U-Haul. I'll screw it up for you in a matter of weeks. My buyout will not be as extreme, and I will head to the golf course immediately afterwards. LSU now is in a situation that they're going to have to need, or going to need, excuse me, to make a hire that not only resounds with the public, but also on the football field as well. And so I'm going to give you a name, Dan, and I think this is going to be one of those names that it will start circulating heavily shortly, and that's Dave Aranda, the former Wisconsin Badger defensive coordinator, the former LSU defensive coordinator, who's now the head coach at Baylor. Suddenly Baylor, in his second full term as head coach, is respectable again. I think you could see Dave Aranda heading back to LSU.
I think he could too, because, you know, thankfully for Dave Aranda, he had great success with LSU. He's respected in the field as a coach. And now, thankfully, if this is something that he's interested in doing, he has experience as a head coach with a prominent, I'm not going to say always successful, but with a prominent football team in the Big 12 with Baylor. So I think there's an opportunity. And let's be honest, we don't know what's happening in the football landscape within the next 2 to 3, I'll call it 5 years, in terms of how conferences are going to look and what's the percentage and the weight of these conferences going to feel like compared to each other. Dave Aranda might be just kind of looking, you know, sideways a little bit and going, I wonder if I should make a move. Not necessarily because I'm upset at Baylor and I'm not getting the opportunity, but there's an opportunity to make a lot more money. He's familiar with the culture, LSU, and I think it's a big thing for any coach coming in. And if LSU has any, man, I mean, they've had some good coaches, they've had some bad coaches, but it always seems like the coach has been bigger than the organization, than LSU. LSU may want to try a Dave Aranda hire that is not a Jimbo Fisher, you know, not one of those guys. It's not James Franklin, which I don't know why he would leave Penn State to begin with, okay? But go with a guy that sees himself as part of the organization, not bigger than the organization.
Sure.
That would be a wise move, but you know, it's SEC football and it's gotta be a name. I mean, most people wouldn't give Lane Kiffin another shot, but he was a name. He got a chance to go down and to give another shot, and he's making some headway out of it. So man, it's just yikes. I hope Dave gets an interview. I really do.
I could see the light down the street as the train is getting ready to approach, which tells me we got to get to a break. One other name real quick, Mel Tucker out of Michigan State. Mel Tucker's got Michigan State at 7-0, but keep an eye on Michigan State. The best team they've beaten so far this year is Northwestern, and they're at 500. So Michigan State's schedule gets much tougher here on the latter half. So if Mel Tucker's one of those names that keeps getting thrown around various coaching circles, it's really going to depend upon how this Michigan State team moves forward in the toughest part of their schedule. Okay, Money Train, TA, coming up after this break. It's the Journey House College Sports Show, powered by Waterstone Bank, presented by Soul Boxer, right here on The Fan. Welcome back. Journey House, College Sports Show, powered by Waterstone Bank, presented by Soul Boxer. We jump right to the Great Midwest Bank hotline to bring in the Money Train. TA joins us. The Money Train being brought to you by the Red Zone MKE, located on Howell, just shy of College Avenue. Stop and enjoy a wide selection of specialty beers as well as all of your favorites while watching the game on one of their many flat screens located throughout. That's the Red Zone MKE. T.A., how are you, sir?
Doing well, gentlemen. How are you?
We're doing great. 3 of 4 last week, and quite honestly, the one that we didn't win shouldn't count. It just shouldn't. Because I think that's one of those games that Vegas paid the electric bill for the entire year on, and that was the Iowa-Purdue game. But with that said, we get 3 and a bonus this week. Let's take game number one, sir.
All right. We're going to go with Pittsburgh at home against Clemson. It seems odd just picking against Clemson every week, but it seems to be working, so I'm going to stick with it.
Yep.
Actually, the quarterback for Pittsburgh, Kenny Pickett, he's got an outside shot at a Heisman. I mean, this kid's good. 70% completion, 24 total touchdowns. He can run and throw.
And that'll be needed against a Clemson team that offensively is struggling, but defensively playing fairly well. What's the spread with that one, bud?
That one's -3.
-3. So we're taking Pitt -3. Number two.
All right, back at it. We watched Army last week against Wisconsin, and I was really kind of worried about the triple option, as most Wisconsin fans were, but they didn't run it very good. We got Wake Forest going in, playing Army. Wake Forest is playing really good football, 6-0, only given 3 points. I like Wake.
You like Wake Forest. I thought for sure you were going to go Army on me, but you like Wake Forest given 3. For your second pick, number 3.
All right. This one might turn your head. I'm going to take Indiana at home, +21 against Ohio State.
Okay.
I'm going to give you a reason now.
Okay.
Okay, Indiana lost to Michigan State, Penn State, and Cincinnati at an average of 14.3 points. Indiana's not as bad as their record shows. I think they'll keep it within the 3 touchdowns.
Okay, fair enough. You kind of sold me on that, because when you said Indiana, I'm telling you, you could hear by my response of, I'm not sure about it, but all right. Give me a bonus pick.
All right. All right. And then I've talked about LSU and their issues, and they're going in Ole Miss, Stark Vegas, and Ole Miss is given 9. Another quarterback that could be on the Heisman, Matt Corral. I mean, here's another guy he has 22 total touchdowns, 1 interception. I mean, he's playing very good ball, and I do like Ole Miss. They ran 101 plays against Tennessee last week, and they would have ran more, but they won.
But that, I think, is one of the greatest lines of analysis I have ever heard. All right, T, here's your 3 picks. We got Pitt, Wake Forest, and Indiana, and Ole Miss for the bonus.
You got it.
Appreciate you, my friend. Thanks.
Not a problem. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, that's the money train rolling through once again. We're at the top of the hour. On the other side of the break, we're going to go into enemy territory and preview this upcoming Badger-Purdue game, and we'll do so in just a bit. It's the Journey House College Sports Show, powered by Waterstone Bank, presented by Soul Boxer, right here on The Fan.
College football, college basketball, Division I to Division III. Let's talk about it all on the Journey House College Sports Show, powered by Waterstone Bank and presented by Soul Boxer. Alongside Dan Underberg, here is your host, Don Wachilis.
Welcome in hour number 2 of the Journey House College Sports Show, powered by Waterstone Bank, presented by Soul Boxer. Our thanks to Waterstone Bank and Soul Boxer for sponsoring our show. Don Wachilis, along with the professor Dan Underberg and Evan Heffelfinger, our producer, as we make our way through hour number 2 here. And right now we're going to jump right to the Great Midwest Bank hotline and bring in a guy from the enemy territory, Mike Carman, who writes for the Journal and Courier, excuse me, down in Lafayette, Indiana, who covers Purdue University, now joining us. Mike, how are you, sir?
Great. How are you guys?
We're doing great. Thank you so much for jumping on tonight and joining us as we get ready for this upcoming Badger-Boilermaker matchup. And, Mike, as much as people were talking about Purdue offensively last week with David Bell and his 200-plus yards receiving, defensively, this Boilermaker team is nothing to roll your eyes at, really. The defense has been kind of a stalwart for this Boilermaker club so far this year.
Yes, it has. There were a lot of off-season changes on the coaching staff. You know, last year they were in every game, but didn't seem to have what they needed to win defensively. And there was some chemistry issues among, you know, the coaching staff. And Jeff decided just to clean house and bring in a whole new group of defensive coaches, three veteran guys, Brad Lambert, Ron English, both who have been head coaches before, along with Mark Hagan, who has worked at numerous Power Five programs. And he's a guy from the state of Indiana, has worked at Indiana, and also worked at Purdue under Joe Tiller. And then they added a young cornerbacks coach in James Adams from Navy. But they got some experience. They got some guys that know what they're doing on the defensive side and know how to teach and develop and help with fundamentals. And, you know, it's not really a big change from a scheme standpoint because they're just playing a basic 4-3. They're just being a little bit more aggressive and doing some things differently on the defensive line to help them get some pressure in the backfield. But, you know, the defense has really been the story of this season for Purdue so far.
Dan?
So let's stick with defense for a little bit. Purdue has what I consider to be an animal on the defensive line, one of your edge rushers that is kind of, I would argue, is under the radar, but not much longer. That's George Karlaftis. He had an amazing game against Iowa. And if you could just give us a little bit more information on him. To be very candid with you, I think most of the edge rushers in the Big Ten look forward to playing Wisconsin's offensive line right now. You know, how does
that?
Yeah, well, exactly. So how does he get stopped, or can he be stopped?
Well, he's been slowed down this year, and the reason I think he's under the radar is he just doesn't have the gaudy numbers that some other people have when it comes to sacks. They just haven't been able to get home and get a lot of sacks. Now, they had four last weekend at Iowa, but before that, they just wouldn't get home and do that. But they were affecting the quarterback. I mean, if you go deeper in some analytical numbers with George and some of their other defensive linemen, they were getting plenty of hurries, they were getting plenty of pressures, and they were getting in the quarterback's face, and they were knocking him off his spot. So it's a situation where you really have to dig into the film a little bit or watch it real closely on TV to see how they're impacting the quarterback. And the other thing too, he's getting doubled and triple teamed by both opponents. You know, Illinois did it, Minnesota did it. And I don't still believe he's got a holding call. I don't think he's drawn a holding call yet this year, which is somewhat amazing for as many people that pay attention to him. But he's a relentless guy that has a huge motor. I compare his motor to Ryan Kerrigan, who played at Purdue several years ago, was first round draft pick by Washington, now is with Philadelphia. He's got that kind of motor, and he's done a lot of offseason work and just a lot of work growing up using his hands. He's very fundamentally sound, and I think the addition of Mark Hagan on the defensive line as his coach has really elevated his game because Mark is really good in that area and has really brought out some other skills that George hadn't shown up to this point.
We're talking with Mike Carman, covers the Purdue Boilermakers for the Journal Courier down in Lafayette, Indiana. Mike, I think even though defensively for the Badgers. They have been the shining star, so to speak, on this season to this point. They have been susceptible to a big play now and then. And I guess if, as a Badger fan, the thing I'm worried about most is going to be Purdue connecting on a big play or two, which will change the tide of the football game. And I guess the person I'm worried about most is somebody I mentioned just a few minutes ago, and that's David Bell. Talk about David and also the other elements of this Purdue offense, because we're going to be focused hard in that the defense for the Badgers has been the only thing that we've really been able to put our hats on so far this season.
Well, if Wisconsin takes anything from Iowa's game plan in defending David Bell over the last 3 years, the defensive staff, number one, should be fired. And then David Bell will be at the top of the Heisman Trophy discussion after next weekend. I have no idea why Iowa plays David Bell the way that they do, but it happens. And he ends up with 37 catches for 558 yards over 3 years against the Hawkeyes.
Wow.
I'm assuming, and I think I'm a good guesser here. I think Wisconsin's going to have its own plan for David Bell, and what that is, you know, exactly, I have no idea. But I think you'll see a couple people around him. You know, the thing with David sometimes is not really the deep throw that gets you all the time; it's the short throw when he's one on one and he's able to get away from the defender. Like last week, it was a short swing pass out in the flat. He put a move on Matt Hankins, and boom, he was gone for 60 yards. He can go deep on you. He showed that last week, and he's shown that throughout his career. But the key last week was really giving Aiden O'Connell a lot of time. He was only sacked once. The offensive line played its best game from a pass protection standpoint it had all year. So if he gets that kind of time again, David Bell's going to get open. And some of the other receivers are going to get open. Milton Wright is a guy you can't sleep on. And their tight end, Payne Durham, just returned last week after missing a couple games due to a concussion. And he's a guy that can produce a big play over the middle. So they do have some weapons in the passing game beyond David Bell. But, you know, he's the guy that Wisconsin's going to pay attention to, and they should. But they can't hit you from some other areas.
Professor?
We got to talk a little bit more about the passing game. And again, I'm going to go guys that, you know, understandably not living the life of the Purdue Boilermakers the way you do. But another one that I think is under the radar a little bit is the quarterback, Aiden O'Connell. And Don, you know, just soak in these numbers a little bit from last week. This is a quarterback that threw 30 for 40 for 375 and two touchdowns. And that's, that just sounds so nice. But
you have a parade for Graham Mertz if he's doing
that. Well, you know, give us a kind of just a breakdown of O'Connell, his strengths, his weaknesses, and how you anticipate he'll be able to kind of compete against Wisconsin's defense.
Well, I mean, the one asterisk on that performance is that Purdue played three quarterbacks on the same drive, where they were trying to generate a little bit more of a rushing game because they've struggled to run the ball traditionally this year. But he's still in rhythm even when he's coming out of the game, because he's coming in and out of the game while the other two quarterbacks are going in for a play or two, and then he comes back in, and then he's hitting David Bell for 20 yards. So he kind of rose above some of the things that they were doing that you wouldn't think that you would do with a guy that finished 30 of 40. His strength, Aiden O'Connell's strength is sitting in the pocket and pushing the ball down the field in the intermediate routes and finding the holes and the seams there. He's not the most elusive guy out there. He's not a runner per se, but he has the best arm strength of the quarterbacks that Purdue has right now, and his ability to get rid of the ball quickly, know where he wants to go, and in the times that he's pushed it over the middle in the intermediate area, Purdue's had a lot of success. But, you know, if you can get to him, you know, you're going to force that ball out a little bit quicker. But as I said, you know, Purdue played very well in the offensive line last week. Now, can they do it again against what I think probably will be a better defense than what they faced last week? Wow. Then that would be a huge step forward. But, you know, O'Connell's a guy that came to the program as a walk-on, didn't know if he'd ever play, and through some injuries and other things, he's gotten an opportunity to play and shine. You know, he's been throwing passes to David Bell, Rondell Moore over the last couple of years, and really has improved his stock, I think.
Mike, I was going to hold off on this question, but I think it parlays a little bit in the way you were talking about how Iowa defended David Bell and what a head-scratcher it is. I'm looking at the line right now from Vegas, and Purdue, who has finally cracked the top 25 after a big win against Iowa, is a dog at home, and Wisconsin favored, depending on where you look, anywhere from 2.5 to 3. Talk about head scratcher. Has anybody watched the Badgers play at all this year and thinking they're going to go into Purdue as a favorite? Do you think it has to do more with how at least Vegas is viewing Purdue will respond now that they finally jumped into the top 25 and how they manage the success and the media attention that's being bestowed upon them?
I think that may be part of it, but I think it comes down to this. And I actually asked somebody who puts together the odds why Wisconsin was favored, and it was pretty simple. I mean, they have Wisconsin higher in their power rankings than Purdue right now, and wow, that's why they're favored. And if you put it on a neutral field, technically Wisconsin would be upwards of a 4.5, maybe 5-point favorite, because you do get a little juice for playing at home. So,
sure,
it's at 2.5 or 3. But if you take that up a little bit, so I just think right now, Wisconsin's won 14 in a row against Purdue, so that probably plays a little bit of a role in itself. But when they match up the teams, however they match them up, Wisconsin is ranked higher in their numbers, and that's where they've gotten it. And they also informed me that the money is coming in 50-50, so they feel like the line is correct.
I just, you know, I get analytics, and I think there's a place for analytics. I said this last week, but there's also a place in the old-fashioned observation perspective that you watch a team play week in and week out. And boy, when I saw that pop up, I just, all I can do is shake my head. Professor?
Well, we've been shaking our head at those lines all season right
yeah,
now.
That's,
I mean,
true.
None of this has made
this,
sense.
If it looks like a gimme, it's probably not.
Well, and that's been all season, which is why
yeah,
I'm stuck
right
in the basement right now. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's look at Saturday's game then. Quite honestly, how do you see this game playing out? How does, if Purdue wins, what did they have to do to win the game? And likewise, if Wisconsin wins, how do they win this game? Because I am anti-Vegas on this one. I don't see how Purdue loses, but walk me through this. How does Purdue win the football game?
Well, if you remember back in 2004, there was no way Purdue was going to lose that game against Wisconsin at Ross-Ade Stadium until Kyle Orton fumbled and changed the fortunes of both programs on that night. So nothing is for certain. I anticipate a low-scoring game just because I think both defenses are good, and both defenses are going to make it difficult to move the ball. Purdue has no running game really to speak of from a traditional sense, and that's why you see the rotating of the quarterbacks. You know, if they can get anything out of their running game, that's going to be a bonus for them. But they're going to have to push the ball down the field through the air. They're going to, David Bell's going to have to make some plays. Other guys are going to have to make some plays. And, the one thing in looking at both teams, when you look at Wisconsin's losses this year, what has happened? They've given up a lot of passing yards. And, Purdue likes to throw the ball and should get over 200 yards passing. And so I like Purdue in that situation, but I do think it'll be a really close game. Purdue's going to have to stop Wisconsin's running game. I know it's not the vaunted attack that Purdue has seen over the last 14 years, where they've rushed for over 3,700 yards in those 14 games, but it's still It's still something that they have to solve on their own. And if they can do that and force Wisconsin into some third and long situations and uncomfortable situations, you know, that's gonna benefit Purdue. But I think Purdue wins a close game, Saturday at Ross-Ade Stadium and snaps that streak. But, you know, turnovers and a lot of other things can come into play with that. But that's just kind of how I see it right now.
Yeah, I'm just chuckling because Wisconsin, you said uncomfortable situations. Wisconsin right now is an uncomfortable situation. The whole thing, so.
Yeah, that's kind of like the headline of this year's recap on what the Badger football program has been. Mike, we're up against a break. Appreciate your time tonight. Thanks for the info. Enjoy the game Saturday and enjoy the rest of this college football season, sir. Appreciate you.
All right. Thank you for having me.
All right, Mike joins us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline.
If applying for a home renovation loan has you feeling anxious, breathe and let Great Midwest Bank help you experience a state of banquility. Get started at greatmidwestbank.com today.
Okay, time, as we said, to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about the D3 Top 25, and we had one of the craziest endings that you could imagine when it comes to college football, pro football, high school football, you name it. And we'll talk about that and give you a soundbite of what it sounded like during the broadcast when we return. Journey House, College Sports Show, powered by Waterstone Bank, presented by Soul Boxer, right here on The Fan. Once again, welcome back. Journey House, College Sports Show, powered by Waterstone Bank and presented by Soul Boxer, 1250 AM, The Fan and Odyssey Station. As we said before, we want to thank Soul Boxer, our presenting sponsor, crafting and bottling bartender quality cocktails you can enjoy anywhere. The bourbon old-fashioned, the brandy old-fashioned, the Manhattan are all crafted to remain true to their supper club origins. You can find Soul Boxer wherever you pick up your favorite libations. Let's talk some D3 football, because in a moment we have a game to end all games. And it was one of those, watching it, I was elated because of who ended up winning. And on the other hand, within seconds, my heart just sank because of how the game ended. So in the top 25, Whitewater remains at number 3 in the nation, 6-0. Lacrosse falls. Even though they won, they fall from 11 to 14. We'll get that one in a moment. Oshkosh, even though they have 2 losses, 3-2, they still sit at number 23 in the nation. River Falls gets a nod. UW Stout gets a nod. So they're outside just looking in the top 25. Whitewater has to play River Falls this week, and River Falls has the most prolific, at least at this point, offense in the WIAC, so that's got the potential to be a really good matchup. But I want to go back to the game last week, and that was between UW La Crosse and UW Platteville. And it came down to the wire, and Mr. Evan, if you have this thing all queued up, let's listen to the UW Platteville Pioneer broadcast as this game winds down.
Three receivers on the near side. Schutz looking middle, rolling now to his left.
He's got Lamers.
He's got a man middle of the field.
Okay, you've got it.
First down.
You got to spike it. You got to spike it. You got to kill the clock.
So a first down here as the ball is set at the 14-yard line. Colin Schutz looks around. I don't know why he's looking.
Schutz, you got to spike it. You've got to spike it. They've been rolling clock.
Oh, he's waiting for it to get down, and then they're going to try for the field goal attempt here. So,
what did he do? He just took a knee.
He took a knee, and the clock is rolling. He completely brain farted on that one. The clock is at 0, and La Crosse is going to escape Platteville with a 24-23 victory. Colin Schutz, who was watching the clock roll down, was waiting to spike it to stop the clock, took the snap, and instead of spiking it, took a knee. The clock kept running with 4 seconds left. The ref was swinging his arm and letting the a clock
all
operator
right, Evan,
know
let's cut in
that
there.
The clock had to keep running.
So, as you heard, Platteville in field goal position, down with 10 to 15 seconds remaining, and the quarterback, and I'll allow, because we were taking the audio from the broadcast, I don't even want to mention the kid's name. I really don't, because it was a mistake that occurred, and he's got to be just beside himself over it. And so they're in field goal position. Now, if you see the video, he looks to the sideline multiple times. And I said on the Bart Winkler show earlier in the week, I would love to have had a camera on the sideline to see what the coaches were doing. Because based on what the quarterback for Platteville was doing, as I keep saying doing over and over, he was simply allowing the clock to run down so they could kick the field goal and not give LaCrosse any time whatsoever to do anything offensively to try then and win the game. And so with that, I can envision the coaches essentially just telling him to wait, hold on, and then, okay, now snap the ball. But in the meantime, I blame this one, Dan, on the coaches. This is, again, you know, I've heard all week long on national media people just ripping Mike McCarthy apart for the Dallas Cowboys and his clock management. And when you're a coach, you've experienced plays like this hundreds, if not thousands of times. A Division III college quarterback may have never experienced anything like this before. So it's on the coaches. I'd have a coach over there screaming, spike it. Not down it, but spike it. I think the terminology, the heat of the moment, everything that took place created a situation like we saw and just heard. And so, as I said, I was ecstatic, Dan, because LaCrosse won the game and is still on pace to have this epic matchup with UW-Whitewater, depending how the weeks go. But immediately, when you watch this quarterback head to the sideline, take a knee, and just kind of waving everybody off, your heart just went out to him, because you know that mistake essentially cost Platteville a chance for the upset.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be talked about for a while, and quite honestly, there's the dark part of me that, you know, listening to that whole situation, the way it unfolded, can you imagine that same play happening and it was the Minnesota Vikings analyst and color guy going through to that? I think that would be spectacular. So same idea. I'd be listening to that over and over again, but my heart does go out to that kid. And yeah, I mean, he's clearly looking for direction.
Yes.
And if I understood this right, they got the first down. They got the first down. They got to the middle of the field. There was time to just, you know, run a play and then spike. I think you're right, Don. This is a coaching thing, where you could have spiked it a couple times. Get the clock down to 3 seconds. They were concerned about giving time back to LaCrosse to potentially find a way to win the football game. Really? Remind me, were there, what was it, 14 seconds left when they got to that point?
Right around there.
So if you spike the ball right there and you give your team the opportunity to, I guess I'll call it, calmly get into position, you know, get the field goal unit out there, get into position, you've got multiple downs or something goes wrong, you huddle up, you down it, you try one more time to get it back on there. But it's like you have this opportunity, because quite honestly, let's go analytics or odds. What are the odds that LaCrosse is going to be able to come back and win that game should the field goal be made? I mean,
you have to think.
Best.
Yeah, LaCrosse was moving the football. Don't get me wrong. But in that situation, in that situation, the odds are, the analytics are in favor of Platteville. Had they done what you just said, Dan, which is down the football, kick the field goal. Now, we're also making a huge assumption that nothing would go wrong during the field goal attempt, right? because you never know that at the D3 level. Heck, the way kicking has gone in football, period, even at the pro level, you don't necessarily know how it's going to play out.
Right.
But what it didn't do was give Platteville a chance, and that becomes the hard part here. If you're Platteville, if you're lacrosse, you're running for the bus and like, let's go. I don't need to shower. I don't need to change. I'm not taking my pads off. I just want to get on the bus and get out of here because we escaped with one. And if you're lacrosse, those are the breaks you need in a season that you're trying to kind of get yourself back into that upper echelon of the WEAC. You're trying to make it possible for you to have an opportunity to get to the playoffs. These are the breaks that you need. So it's unfortunate again for Platteville and their quarterback. It's unbelievably fortunate if you're an Eagle fan for UW lacrosse. This week, Stout is at lacrosse. Stout is no joke. As I said, Stout is outside looking in that top 25, so the games don't get any easier. Whitewater, they take a four-hour bus trip up to River Falls and take on one of the most prolific offenses in WEAC. UW-Eau Claire is at Oshkosh, Stevens Point at Platteville. And again, as we always say, I really, really, really highly recommend, whether it's a WEAC team, whether it's Carthage, whether it's Carroll, whether it's Concordia, any of those schools, to tune in on Saturday. Just go to their website. They have links. These schools are now doing a fantastic job of broadcasting the games. Sometimes you're going to get announcers, and sometimes you're just getting a live feed with some crowd noise in the background, but you're going to really, I guarantee, enjoy the football that gets played at the Division III level come Saturday afternoon. So again, a tough loss for Platteville, an incredible escape for lacrosse, and it's one of those that it went viral and obviously would. It's just a shame it didn't happen to a Vikings quarterback so we could really enjoy it and play it, as Dan
Revel.
Said, over, over, and over. All right, let's take a break. On the other side of the break, I want to pick up some things that we left off from headlines, talk about some of the games this week, and then, of course, as we make our way towards the top of the hour, we'll shovel the funk. We'll get to it all next. It's the Journey House, College Sports Show, powered by Waterstone Bank, and presented by Soul Boxer right here on The Fan. Once again, welcome back in. Journey House College Sports Show, powered by Waterstone Bank, presented by Soul Boxer. Don Wachilis, along with the Professor Dan Underberg and Evan Heffelfinger, as we continue to make our way towards the top of the hour. Don't forget, at the top of the hour, we swing it over to the CBS Sports Network, join Zach Gelb in his show at 8 o'clock. But before we get there, we still have a few minutes to make our way through the realm of college football. We had so much to do today with college football. I put the preview of the Wisconsin Badger basketball team off until next week. So we'll talk some Badger basketball next week as we keep previewing the various teams in our area and around the state, as we're now only a week and a half away from exhibition season for the teams, and then we get into what you can call preseason basketball, the non-conference games for the Badgers, for Marquette, for UWM. It's going to be a good basketball season here in the 414. Hey, Dan, let's go down to Oklahoma, if we could, for a minute, because I think there's an interesting storyline that gets kind of swept underneath the rug a little bit, and that Spencer Rattler, who was the starting quarterback for the Oklahoma Sooners, got benched the other week for Caleb Williams. We talked, Evan and I talked about it last week, where we had a couple of student reporters that found their way into a public building near the practice facility, and they were charting who was getting the starting reps and basically put it out there that Caleb Williams was working out more with the number one offense than Spencer Rattler, then all of a sudden they shut the media out. We go into last week, Oklahoma gets the win, Caleb Williams gets the start, and now we're starting to hear about Spencer Rattler looking at the transfer portal. And for those that don't know who Spencer Rattler is, this is the equivalent of Graham Mertz, both coming in roughly at the same time, both highly acclaimed out of high school, and both have struggled a little bit as far as their college career has gone. However, Spencer Rattler was probably touted a little bit more than Graham Mertz. He was a guy that many thought would be a Heisman favorite going into this year. Many felt he could be a top five NFL pick, and he's really struggled, as I said, moving forward so far in this college football season. So, Dan, one of the things I want to say or toss to you and get your thoughts is the whole name, image, and likeness thing. So going into this season, Spencer Rattler inked a deal with Raising Cane's. I hate to bring up Raising Cane's because it immediately makes me hungry. One of the great, great fast food restaurants in the history of mankind, who now has an establishment, I'll call it, in Madison on State Street. The best chicken fingers you will ever eat in your life with the Texas toast. And I need to stop because now I'm going to get off the air and just go and drive to Madison so I can get some chicken fingers. But Spencer Rattler inks a seven-figure deal with them to be their spokesperson. And so I'm wondering if Spencer Rattler could be really one of the first speed bumps in the name, image, and likeness area of the world of college athletics, because I'm wondering if the mounting pressure to perform with now this huge NIL contract, if it was too much for the young kid, and that's why he's struggling. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there because I can't figure out why at a place like Oklahoma, where quarterbacks seem to thrive, he's having so much trouble.
Yeah, I think that's a great question, Don, because I don't think anybody understands. I mean, last season with the issue of the pandemic and bringing him on there, and you know, he still was able to show flashes, I guess is the best way that I would put it. That, you know, you were looking at him play and you think, okay, he's growing. He's going to have this opportunity to get better. And, you know, he's on the Heisman watch list before the season starts. And I think part of the danger of the NIL moving forward is that you've got people identifying and circling particular athletes that they believe are both A, going to be successful, and B, are marketable and are part of larger programs that are going to get a lot of attention. But they really don't understand, you know, maybe the nuances of football. They're just looking at the marketing opportunity. So you throw a seven-figure opportunity at a 19, 20-year-old kid, so because he was a true freshman last year, if I remember right. So he's 19, maybe pushing 20 years old. And he may not have been ready for that. And he may, you know, there's pressure to put him on the field. I think, though, too, you don't want to put any player like under a negative microscope. But I mean, we've got to look at, you know, the kid is walking in being the man at 17, 18 years old. He's getting a seven-figure deal. How much of this just got into his head where you know, it's all of a sudden, yeah, I got this. It's not a big deal. I'm Spencer Rattler, quarterback. I can make that pass. I can play. And the level of preparation and practice that goes into this level of football is surreal. And maybe, you know, there's a maturity issue again. Again, this is a kid that, you know, after he was benched, he stopped following OU football on Instagram. So, yeah, to hell with it. So, yeah, who knows?
I get the age part of it, but the word there is maturity. What did we spend the biggest part, not really, but I'm just exaggerating, of the first hour? We were talking about Coach O. If you read the Athletic article, there's a level of immaturity with Coach O, and the man is 60 years old.
Right.
If you read what happened to him after they won the national championship, after LSU backed up the Brinks truck, and how he's conducted himself since then, there's a lack of maturity in a 60-year-old man with the amount of money that he received and how he kind of went to the wild side, as opposed to like a Nick Saban who doubles down and refocuses on his team and his brand and all of these other things. To think that somebody, Dan, like Spencer Rattler would struggle with that, it's not hard to really believe.
Yeah, I don't think there's more attention on these players now. There's far more attention on these players. And yes, they bring it on themselves a little bit, but not only their actions, but by way of now being a spokesperson for a particular brand, where they understand that, you know, a bad game can really impact them now in a variety of different ways.
Yep.
Branding level, sales level. And, you know, if you have a bad game, my goodness, you know, that reflects on everything. Whereas before, you might be able to overcome that a little bit easier. So I think we should watch that Spencer Rattler issue really carefully. Does he enter the portal? Does he look to go somewhere else? I think it's just really, really interesting in terms of what could happen. This whole portal thing, Don, I think between the NIL and what goes on there, and then we're not spending enough time, like, you know, not just you and I and Evan, but just everybody. How does the portal kind of impact the NIL? And how, what's going to happen if a major player chooses to go somewhere else? And is on this. I think it's going to be really fascinating over the next two or three seasons to see how this turns out.
I think the interesting thing right now is that we've had, obviously, the transfer portal, and we got all excited because now athletes have an opportunity, and rightfully so, to make some decisions on their own as far as where they want to play. Now we've got name, image, and likeness. We've got these NIL contracts, I'll call them, rolling through, which is a great thing for the players. What happens, though, is we get excited about the fact that players can now make money. We get excited about the fact that players can go off and go elsewhere in order to further their athletic career. And what we don't talk enough about is the combination that you just described, Dan, or the fact that you had over 1,000 players enter the portal, or I should say are still in the portal, going into this season that left the university and were not picked up by anybody else. So when we enter into these new entities, so to speak, there are positives, but there are also negatives that really don't get discussed that can weigh heavily on some of these young athletes. And as Dan said, I think it's something we need to keep an eye on. Let's get to a break. On the other side of the break, as I always say, everybody else hands out helmet stickers. We do it with shovels. Shovel of Fun coming up after the break. The Journey House College Sports Show powered by Waterstone Bank, presented by Soul Boxer, as always, right here on The Fan.
You know what? I want to shovel the funk. I want to shovel the funk. I want to shovel the funk. I feel like shovel the funk. I got to shovel the funk. You want to shovel the funk? Do you want to shovel the funk? Then go ahead.
One last time, welcome in. It's the Journey House College Sports Show powered by Waterstone Bank and presented by Soul Boxer right here, 1250 AM, The Fan and Odyssey Station. Time to hand out our shovels. Professor, since you were absent last week, want to give you an opportunity right now to kick this thing off. Go ahead, sir.
Okay, I'm going to go a little pipe bomb on you. Do you guys remember when the state of Florida had good football teams in college?
I do.
Neither do I.
I do, too.
Neither do I. So Florida State, Florida, Miami, ouch. I'm rather reveling in that. So congratulations, Florida football. When you were so good all those years ago, you're not good anymore.
I don't remember who I was listening to, and I'll have to look it up. They went through, I think, every Division I college football program in Florida and gave their records over the last 10 games, and it's astounding how mediocre football is in Florida. Evan, you're up, my friend.
Oh, man. That's a tough one to follow up. I want to give my shovel, which I don't know if this is negative or positive. I'm just giving my shovel to every single hamburger and a double meat cheeseburger in the Louisiana territory. Because Coach O is coming for it. I also have to give a shovel to Ray Baker. That's what he calls the sun. Because Coach O is going to be doing a lot of jogging out there. So just, you know, watch out. I also have to give a shovel to Coach O, the true star of the Blind Side, as I like to say, for getting paid to not do his job. I love that is every worker's dream to get paid to not do their job. So huge shout out to Coach O, to hamburgers and double cheeseburgers, double meat cheeseburgers, excuse me.
I want everybody listening tomorrow as you go to McDonald's, Culver's, Burger King, wherever, go order a double meat cheeseburger when you roll through the drive-thru. That would make my day. For me, my shovel goes to Eastern Washington's Eric Berry. He threw for 600 yards on 26 of 35 passing. 7 TDs in the air. He ran for one as Eastern Washington beat Idaho 71-21. All right, music in the background says it's time for us to get out of here. Thanks to Matt Bells from Bucky's Fifth Quarter. Also want to thank Mike Carmen from the Lafayette Journal Sentinel joining us to give us his perspective on this Purdue-Wisconsin matchup. For the Professor Dan Underberg, Evan Heffelfinger, our producer, I'm Don Wachilis. Thank you as always for joining us. Zach Gelb and the CBS Sports Network is next. Have yourself a great week. We're back in 6-22 on Wisconsin.